Hello, this is Michael Criswell with RelentlessHeart.com with some short but exciting news before you begin listening to the story today. Many of you who don't have great internet connections always available have been asking for a way to download my messages on your phone or your computer so that you don't have to be restricted to YouTube for listening. I am so excited to tell you that Relentless Heart is now on iTunes as a podcast, and you can subscribe, listen, and download the messages all for free right from your phone and or your favorite podcasting app. To subscribe, you can search for Relentless Heart. Make sure you put a space between the words, or you can type in my name, Michael Criswell, directly from iTunes or your favorite podcasting app and subscribe. Even better, you can hit pause right now and click the podcast link that I put in the description of this YouTube video. This is wonderful news, my friends, because now I'm going to be able to put a ton more of my recordings and journal entries on the podcast, which I haven't had the time to do for YouTube. To begin with, I'm going to be podcasting the completed chapters of my new book, Astonishing Grace to the Chief of All Fools, followed by my top messages on YouTube, then followed by lots of great messages I've never publicly shared, and my own personal journal recordings as I was learning to walk with God. I'd like to ask you for your help in one small thing that I know will be a blessing to others. If you've been benefiting from the messages on YouTube and you feel God has used my messages to encourage you, will you please consider taking a moment right now before you forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and to please rate the podcast using the star system and then perhaps leave a comment. Others that have never heard of this ministry may be inclined to listen based on your review when they find this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for supporting the work Father is doing through Relentless Heart, and may God continue to bless you as you listen. Astonishing Grace to the Chief of All Fools by Michael Criswell. Chapter 8, The Single Worst Day of My Life. It was 8 p.m., on Tuesday night, May 21st, 2002. My attorney had just spoken the most terrifying words to me that I had ever heard. "Mike, it's all over. I'm sorry." This was the end of our five-year dream. All was shattered, and I was overwhelmed with fear and dread. What in the world was I going to do now? As I hung up the phone with him, that's when I again heard those same words in my spirit, which I knew were from God. "It's going to get worse before it gets better, but do not be afraid. I am in control, and this is about your character development." It was now 8 p.m., and the gym closed each night at 10 p.m. I immediately went and started explaining to the employees that I didn't have time to give them the details, but that we were finished, and I desperately needed any help they could give me to get as much of the stuff we actually owned and had paid cash for out of the club and to our house. I even rounded up a few members who knew us and loved us. A few people went home and got trucks and came back to help us move. I was walking around in total shock, feeling like my head had just been dismembered from my body by a sharp sword. I can feel it in my stomach even now when I think back on this terrifying night. About 20 people worked with us all night long to take as much stuff as we possibly could get out of that 10,000 square foot gym. A few guys took out all the lockers from the bathrooms. Others helped us get the stereo system, the cabinets we built, all the plate weight, our dumbbells, the TVs, the flooring in the group fitness, all our supplies, the Pro Shop merchandise, furniture, and toys from the childcare. I couldn't believe how much we were able to get out of that gym in just 8 hours. It was absolutely incredible. Obviously, we had to leave all of the actual large fitness equipment, the treadmills, and the ellipticals. We finished up at 4 a.m., just 1 hour before we were supposed to open the club and when the members would begin showing up. I typed up a note to hang on the door with a contact phone number and told them we would be in touch soon to explain what happened. We went home in shock and completely exhausted. I tried to go straight to sleep. It was now May 22nd, 2002. I was woken up around 9 a.m. by a phone call from a news reporter named Roger Losey from our local Channel 9 news station in Orlando, Florida. He sounded so empathetic and genuinely concerned about what had happened to us and wanted to hear our story. He asked me if we could meet him at the gym at 10 a.m. and tell the story. I felt relieved and saw this as an opportunity to quickly communicate to our members that we had been badly taken advantage of and that this was not something we thought was going to happen. So I agreed to meet with him. On my way to the gym, I spoke with my attorney about what I was doing. And as I'm pulling into the shopping center to meet the reporter, he said, "Mike, you cannot talk to the media about anything related to this court case because it's currently in litigation. You have to keep your lips sealed." I thought to myself, what in the world am I supposed to do and say now? Sleep deprived and running on sheer adrenaline, I found myself getting out of the car and walking up to the gym door like I was in a fog. I could see a bunch of members and people standing around talking like at the scene of a crime, but I had no idea what was about to happen. As I stepped up onto the sidewalk in front of the gym entrance, the top two news channels in Central Florida whipped out their cameras and lights on me and immediately started firing off pointed questions. Not as if they were really concerned about what had happened to us, but as if we were criminals. They had found a few members who had just paid for an annual membership in full, and by the time I got there, they had those members already fired up and ready to confront me on camera. I couldn't believe this was happening. I had showed up hoping to communicate that I had been badly taken advantage of as a young Christian business owner, and instead, I was now being accused of being a criminal who took everyone's money on purpose. LA Fitness moved into our space within 3 days as a temporary gym and pre-sale center while their huge club was being built. It was absolutely surreal to drive by and see LA Fitness banners now up where the Lord's Gym sign was just days earlier. The people working out were paying LA Fitness, and yet they were working out in the building I paid so much to construct, and yet now had nothing to show for it. I found myself thinking, hey, that's our $150,000 worth of fitness equipment, which I still owe about $100,000 on, that you're now making money from while your members are sweating all over it. Hey, that's our $4,000 worth of window tent, which is keeping your members cool. That's our $9,000 electrical system, our lights, our air conditioning system, our gym flooring, our artwork on the wall, our childcare area. I could see in the windows at night when I drove by, and I could see they were selling memberships at our front desk. I thought, hey, that's our front desk, and those are our cabinets where my friend Tip Killingsworth and I spent several days installing them by ourselves to save money. It was just such a horrible feeling to see all of this. It made me literally feel sick to my stomach. It must be similar in some way to the feeling a man or a woman has when they come home and find their spouse in their own bed with someone else. To me, it felt like the twisting of a knife which had already been plunged deep into my heart. The news story ran about 5 nights in a row on the local news to hundreds of thousands of people in Central Florida. They had found some other members who had paid in full, but who didn't know Jennifer and I personally or our hearts for the gym and the members. They went to their house to interview them. One man said about me, "He took our money, knowing they were going to close. That's criminal." The truth is, as you know from hearing the whole story now, is that we didn't know we were going to close. LA Fitness had led us to believe a deal was in the works right up until the last minute. Unfortunately, gyms going out of business and people losing money is something that happens all too often. So the media jumps on those stories like sharks to blood. They twisted and distorted our story so badly that we became prisoners in our own home for nearly 6 months. We wouldn't even go to a grocery store within 5 miles of our house for that entire time. We never went out for walks or appeared in public unnecessarily. We stayed home all the time and only answered the door when it was the sheriff's department delivering another lawsuit or court order. Contrary to the words which that lady or angel spoke to me in church that morning, God's name was now being shamed by me, not glorified by me. What a horrible feeling to have done something in the name of God and then watch it end in such a scandalous disaster. Perhaps I can now better understand what it would be to desire to have a mountain fall on you. Nevertheless, God was so merciful and was only going to allow me to feel so much shame and guilt before he began to bring some comfort. Job 5:18. "For he wounds, but he also binds up. He injures, but his hands also heal." We had given the media a phone number with an answering machine for our members to call. We received about 100 messages, and only 2 of them were ugly. Jennifer and I had personally sold more than 600 of the membership agreements through our presale office before the gym opened. As a result, we got to know quite a few of our members personally. Most of them realized we were just a young couple trying to operate a Christian gym and bring God glory, not slick business owners trying to scam people. Many people expressed their sadness for us and told us they were praying for us and even stated that we don't owe them anything. We even had a few members bring cooked food to our door because they knew we had been traumatized. I remember running into this one engineer who had joined and always gave me a hard time at the gym. He had a dry sense of humor and was a tough cookie to please. He regularly hounded me when the gym had opened about not having all the equipment yet. He had paid for a family membership in full for an entire year and had now lost the remaining 3 months' worth of his membership money since we had closed. I saw him at breakfast at a local diner, and I was afraid of how he might respond. He responded with such compassion that I was really surprised. He said he completely forgave us and that we owed him no money. He even wished us well. These kinds of things and several others were clearly God's grace to us. God knew I needed this encouragement. I was so disgusted with the media's twisted covering of the story that I sent them a letter regarding the fact that they had sent a reporter who claimed to be a Christian and then who slayed me on television without telling anyone the whole truth. Roger Losey personally called me and apologized after receiving my letter, and I forgave him, but the damage was already done. By now, there were rumors that we had taken all the members' money and bought a new $70,000 Mercedes, or that we had moved to the Bahamas. The true story was that I was ruined and had nearly $500,000 in business debt, which I owed, even though my business was practically stolen from me. Even while LA Fitness was still using all of our equipment, the lawsuits from the companies who we leased it all from started coming in. I opened the door at our home on Thanksgiving Day 2002 to a sheriff serving me yet another lawsuit. This time of my life was the closest I had ever come to thinking suicide was a good option to escape what I was facing. I had just lost everything in such a public, devastating, and humiliating way. I was now being slandered each night on the evening news, and at the same time, Jennifer became so bitter towards me, exclaiming that I had just ruined her life financially. She felt that I was the one who did all of this to her, and I was the one who forced her to co-sign with me on the debts we now incurred. All she could think about was how much debt she was now responsible for, personally, because of what I had done to her. Ironically, she never again had to work outside of our home or personal business for the remainder of our marriage. This is how it was throughout the marriage. When I was winning in life or business, she wanted to be my partner and wanted an executive title right alongside of me. However, as soon as failure came, she no longer wanted anything to do with it and would immediately turn against me and blame me for everything. I heard Brother Zach Poonen from CFC Church in Bangalore, India, preaching one time that he felt Judas Iscariot was probably a loyal supporter of Jesus in the beginning. He suggested that Judas might have been motivated by the idea of being promoted into a high position of honor and power by being a follower of the Messiah who was to be the king over Israel. However, when he realized that Jesus was not coming up from walking the lowly path before men, he turned against Christ. It's not hard for me to imagine that what Zach was saying may well be true. Here's what's so ironic to me personally about Judas. Jennifer told me, as she was separating from me, more on this later in the story, that I was worth more to her dead than alive. She was referring to the fact that I had life insurance. Ironically, Judas clearly felt the same way about Jesus. He betrayed Jesus to his death for 30 pieces of silver. My lowest point in this whole disaster came after we had run out of things to sell, and I had to break Tyler's piggy bank to come up with $6 and change to buy him some more formula. I then spent 6 months questioning everything I knew about life, God, faith, business, and success. I just kept asking God, why? 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 Proverbs 19:3. A man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord. I was overcome with grief and confusion. Everything I thought I knew about God and faith all proved to be a lie. I cried and cried in great pain and distress and just kept asking God why for about 6 months. I analyzed and reanalyzed everything, trying to find the meaning in it all. I brainstormed repeatedly over the details of what did happen and what might have happened if only I had done this or that differently. I got trapped in trying to make my own meaning out of the madness. Paralysis of analysis had set in, and I was in a tailspin, not even able to function much in daily life. Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. One day, God used one page in a book to help get me out of the mental tailspin I was in. He showed me that I had gone wrong when I ignored his yield signs and instead just kept pushing forward apart from his will. He had given me strong checks in my mind and spirit regarding doing business with Vince the Mormon and with John Freeling, who was clearly desiring money more than he was God. Incidentally, John got off a public bus at a random stop and dropped dead at the age of 41 on April 22, 2003, 11 months to the day after our gym closed. John left behind his wife and young son. As best as I can remember, it was believed to be an issue in his heart due to the use of steroids. God had also given me checks in my spirit about signing that contract with the builder. He gave me checks about taking the loan from my neighbor Steve and about him also co-signing on the business loan with us. He gave me checks about personally guaranteeing the lease for the gym space. Proverbs 2:11. Discretion will protect you and understanding will guard you. At each and every spiritual yield sign God gave me in my spirit, I simply ignored them and kept on going. In my mind, I was working for the glory of God, and being so determined, nothing was going to stop me except God. Father helped me to see that all the details that had happened to me after I ignored those yield signs were completely irrelevant. They were simply the consequences of my disobedience, and there was no need for me to spend time trying to make meaning out of them. The only meaning I needed was that I got ahead of him and I failed to listen to his warnings when time after time he showed me red flags surrounding the people I was yoking myself to in this project. I had been given ample evidence that this tree's fruit was rotten, and this was not a pleasing endeavor to God. But I didn't want to hear that, because that got in the way of my strong desires, my good plans, and my will being done. I wonder how many people just read that and thought of the person they chose to marry. Perhaps God warned them over and over, but they pushed ahead and now suffer the terribly painful consequences. Those people should keep reading, because ignorance and stubbornness isn't something God can't work through and redeem. The only thing I see that God can't do anything with is our stubborn pride and the lack of humility to be honest about our mistakes. Again, I was not guilty before the eyes of men of being an evil person, but before God, I was guilty of being prideful, stubborn, and obstinate. I was guilty of making several unwise and ungodly alliances to build the Lord's gym. I had such high hopes to be able to use the gym to minister to God's people. At one time, we had over 50 World Vision children, which we had adopted monthly through a portion of our membership dues. I wanted so badly to do something good for God, but in the end, I was left with nothing but loss and destruction and heartache. Psalm 127, 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. I had violated several biblical principles in the Word of God, and now I was indeed reaping what I had sown. I guess I thought I might be an exception because I wasn't doing something man considers evil, and because I was so zealous to do something to glorify God. I was dead wrong by leaning on my own understanding. Galatians 6:7. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. From this, I learned that God not only doesn't show favoritism to men, but he also doesn't show favoritism to his own word. Contrary to what we might think, I learned that God doesn't pay closer attention to the promises and blessings in his word than he does the warnings and the violations of his word. He was indeed watching over all the principles I was in violation of, and he was seeing that they too were fulfilled. Jeremiah 1, verse 12. The Lord said to me, "You have seen correctly, for I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled." 2 Chronicles 20:35 through 37. Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, made an alliance with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who was guilty of wickedness. He agreed with him to construct a fleet of trading ships. After these were built, Eleazar prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, "Because you have made an alliance with Ahaziah, the Lord will destroy what you have made. The ships were wrecked and were not able to set sail to trade." Isaiah 30, verse 1. "Woe to the obstinate children, declares the Lord, to those who carry out plans that are not mine, forming an alliance, but not by my spirit, heaping sin upon sin." These scriptural principles are a perfect example of what Paul was explaining to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3:15 about how he had known the Holy Scriptures from infancy, which were able to make him wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. He was clearly referring to the wisdom of the Old Covenant Scriptures and the principles there, since the New Testament had not yet been written. "I was not yet living by the wisdom of these scriptures, and I was suffering as a result. After the gym collapsed, I went through 5 job fiascos in less than 18 months, trying to get back on track and make enough money to start paying back the debts. With one frustrating disappointment after another, Jennifer lost all her remaining trust in my ability to provide for our family, and we lived on the brink of divorce for months on end. I became desperately frustrated and began sinking lower and lower. I thought I was at least catching my breath regarding the lawsuits and business disaster, only to discover that the landlord, which is one of the largest shopping center developers in the country, had been waiting to come after us until after LA Fitness was moved out of our space and into their own building. In October of 2003, they filed a motion for summary judgment against us for over $160,000. On October 14th, 2003, I was to be deposed by their attorney regarding their suit against me and the countersuit my attorney had filed before the gym closed. They wanted to put a lien on our home and anything else we had in order to collect that $160,000 in backed rent. The night before I was deposed, I laid down in my bed to continue my Bible reading from where I had left off in the morning and to seek God's help in prayer. The next day, I was facing a giant. If he didn't help, we were going to be completely destroyed. I turned the page, and there in the top left-hand side of the page, I read these words from 2 Chronicles 20, verse 17. "You will not have to fight this battle. Take up your positions, stand firm, and see the deliverance the Lord will give you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Go out to face them tomorrow, and the Lord will be with you." Incidentally, I wrote the date and time this happened in my Bible margin. It was 9:11 p.m. This was long before God started showing me numbers or before I realized what the good promise of Psalm 91:1 was. I remember their attorney was very confident and perceived a slam dunk win for his client. After he stated the complaint and the known facts he had of the case, I was given the opportunity to speak as I answered all of their questions. Mind you, all of this was being recorded word for word by a stenographer and on audio. I wish I had that recording, because after I was given an opportunity to tell, quote, my side of the story, This man's entire disposition and body language visibly changed. Perhaps directly by the Spirit of God, this man recognized that the tide had just been turned in my favor. I felt I could just keep going, but he seemed to want me to stop, as if he had already heard enough and would get back to me after he discussed these things with his client. I could see the victory before it actually came. God indeed fought for me. It was quite amazing to see it happen in person. Acts 6:10. These men began to argue with Stephen, but they could not stand up against his wisdom or the Spirit by whom he spoke. How loving and merciful is our Father! Even after all the trouble I had brought upon myself, and even more, after all the shame I brought upon his name, he was still so kind to me and saved me when I cried out to him in honesty of heart. Oh, Abba, I am beyond my ability to express my gratitude to you in words. Thank you, Abba. Thank you. You are so compassionate that you still saved a stubborn, stiff-necked fool like me. Psalm 103:13 through 14. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. Psalm 50, verse 15. And call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you will honor me. Psalm 149, verse 4. For the Lord takes delight in his people. He crowns the humble with salvation. Just a few days later, I received a letter stating that if I would drop my suit against them, they would drop their suit against me. Here was one of the top shopping center developers in the country who could outspend me in court a million times over, backing down from what had looked like a slam dunk win on the $160,000 they were suing me for. God had just wiped out $160,000 in debt, just like that. I was so happy and so thankful. This was a miracle of his divine providence, and I knew he was still with me and hadn't given up on me. As we see in Hebrews 12, the good Father loves us enough to bring correction and discipline. But I am amazed at the amount of resources and time he will expend to discipline and save us. God is even willing to allow others to be hurt in order to save his elect out of their ignorance or deception. I am humbled so low when I look at the amount of wasted money and time and hurt people which God allowed just to save me from my hellish pride and self-sufficiency. I cannot comprehend it. What kind of a love is this? Isaiah 43:3-4. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. I give Egypt for your ransom, Cush and Seba in your stead. Since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you, I will give men in exchange for you, and people in exchange for your life. I was encouraged by this win and deliverance from the Lord. But just a few days later, on Saturday, October 18th, 2003, I received the sad news that my dear sister and friend Margie Barboza had succumbed to the cancer and passed away. These several years were some really tough times for me. How in the world do you reconcile your entire belief and understanding of a good God with these types of tragic endings? If the devil were ever able to convince me to become an atheist, these were his best opportunities to try. Tragically, this would not be the only devastating experience of unanswered prayer I would face. May 22nd, 2002 was definitely the loneliest and darkest single day I have ever had in my life, as I stood before all those news cameras being crushed. But 7 years later, there would come a season in my life that was much darker and far more painful.